FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is June 9th, 2020. Well, we had some remarkable job numbers last Friday that sent the market, propelled it into full speed up. And who knows, maybe we'll get a new record high on the Dow. I mean, the NASDAQ, it's already there. The Russell 2000, I mean, we're living in a great world again. It's like the past couple months never happened. Well, that and guess what? Lockdowns have been ended by the riots. It's not okay to protest or demonstrate against the lockdown because it's depriving your family of income and literally making it impossible for you to feed your family. But if you're going to demonstrate, well, then it's totally safe. Sounds like a little something wrong there, doesn't it? Well, I'd like to know your opinion. Why don't you email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, John Rubino is with us. Happy Monday, John. So, man, a lot of stuff going on here, huh?
Hey, Kerry. Yeah, man, what a week. Jeez. We might as well start with that jobs number that you talked about, which was amazingly, surprisingly good until like the next day, the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out and said, oh, by the way, we missed this huge chunk of unemployed people over here. And if you added that back in, it wouldn't have been nearly as good. But and this is the way the government does a lot of their statistical releases. They'll put out an extremely surprisingly favorable number, and then they'll revise it back to reality later. But all anybody remembers is the original headline announcement. Right.
Yeah.
So the markets react to the positive news and they ignore the dribble of revisions that come later. But, you know, we didn't add a bunch of jobs in May. That's ridiculous. They were still laying people off in May. The number of bankruptcies in the last month were, I think, an all-time record in the U.S. And small businesses, something like what was it? 40,000 small businesses have closed, never to reopen. And a lot of that happened in May. So, you know, ignore that phenomenal jobs number. Although it should be better going forward because, like you said, the lockdown is over. Yeah. And people are going back to work. You know, there were so many cross currents that it's hard to tease them all out in the protests and the counter protests, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, everybody had a reason to hit the streets here.
And if not, you know, they
part
found
of it
one.
Was just the obvious horrendous videos that keep coming out where every week or so we see a new black guy be murdered by a white cop on video. And that's, you know, that's a steady diet.
Well, that's not every week. It feels like
every week
because it's not, like but it's up. Not. That's look, this, these are isolated cases and the media has made them out to be like, it's a daily occurrence. All right. I watched cops recently, how they treat people. Even when you watch the cop shows, granted, they're on camera, they know it. But this guy knew he was on camera, too. The police are much more deferential and less confrontational now than they were a year or two ago. And it's because of those cameras. This case, look, John, they've been planning these riots for months. We know Black Lives Matters. We know that that Antifa, all right, the bricks were piled up on the riot path. And what they did to New York was purely the result of organized gangs. And, you know, hey, it's not to say that the people don't have something legitimate to bitch about. They certainly do. But I think it all came to a head because of the quarantine, the lockdown, people being stuck, economic woes and everything else. You know, our good friend Gerald Celente always says, when people lose everything, they lose it. And in just 2 months, you have lost everything if you're an average American, right?
Well, yeah, we found out what the limit is for a lockdown, and it's about 2 months. People will not put up with anything longer than that. And that was a big part of the frustration that boiled over here. But, you know, you can't have these videos come out continuously where, yes, only one black guy was killed by a white cop in the last week out of millions and millions of interactions. So statistically, I will grant you that it's not something that's happening all the time.
It's
all over
isolated.
The place.
It's very isolated.
But it's on everybody's screen. So just because it was one thing, it's the one thing you see. And, you know, if you're a black guy and you have to see somebody being killed every week or two just because they look like you, you know, that is something that as white people, it's really hard to relate to. But it's a daily reality for these guys. So it's not a surprise that
but it was a racial killing from the standpoint that it was a white cop killing a black guy. OK, but we don't have any knowledge here that this was racially motivated. All right. It's clearly a case of police brutality, but cops kill white people. In fact, the number of cops killed this year so far, 40% have been killed by blacks. We're talking about violent in the line of duty killings. The fact is, of all the people the cops have killed over the past half a year, 6 months, it's basically reflected the distribution in the population, about 14%. No, this was a setup here. It's not to say that the black community doesn't have their gripes with the police. They certainly, certainly do. But what's the end result here, John? They've burned down their own neighborhoods. Now they can't go to the local Target to buy groceries. There's no grocery stores or drug stores left in the south side of Chicago or wherever they were rioting. And, you know, so, yeah, everybody's up on edge because of the quarantine, because of the economy, because things are perceived to be spinning out of control. But we're being manipulated by the media, just like we were manipulated Friday with the job numbers. The perception of massive police brutality towards blacks is just not there. All right. It's just not. And the news media is stoking the flames.
Statistics versus video.
I know, but video is not always real.
And so when it's something you see continuously, it affects your opinion of what the world is. And that's what's going on out there.
Yeah, and the media
no matter what the statistics are, if you got to see that all the time, you're going to be deeply frustrated.
The media is stoking the flames. The media is stoking the flames. They want race wars. This is what they live for. And then when we have these race riots, which we had, they called them peaceful protesters. All right. They're burning down New York City. I don't know if you saw the video of New York City. They're burning the place down. And those are peaceful protesters, John.
You know. Well, nobody really wants a race war, Kerry.
Oh, the media does. They live for it.
Nobody wants
a race war. Part of the plan.
Well, I mean, there's a tiny little fringe on both the left and the right that, yeah, okay, they would like to see it come to a head and get it over with because they think their side will win and they can impose their version of utopia on the country. And they're, of course, delusional, as people at the very fringes of the political spectrum always are. But the vast majority of people in the U.S. just want to be able to go to work.
Yes.
And they want to be able to walk down the street without worrying about being pulled over and frisked and abused. And, you know, they want to be treated the way you and I are treated normally, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And the lockdown impacted people who were on the lower rungs of the economic ladder a lot more severely because they had no savings.
Yes, of course.
The government sent them one $1,200 check per adult, and that was it while they're bailing out all the big companies. And a lot of these guys, you know, they're stuck in little apartments. They don't have big houses with backyards and decks and stuff like that.
Substandard housing all the way.
Yeah. So, you know, picture being stuck in a New York City one bedroom apartment with two kids and two or three adults as with no good air conditioning while the weather starts to get hot and humid out.
And there's no reason to be doing it either. All right. The whole thing was a farce. And this is all part of the plan, John. I mean, look, they want to bring down the U.S. They want to destabilize things. They're doing a great job. I believe the quarantine was a deep state operation, and it worked magnificently, all to get rid of Trump. But you know what the net result is? they only make his position stronger, because the average person, John, is horrified by the vast destruction that's taken place in our cities. They want law and order, and these moronic Democrats are running around, let's just defund the police. Let's have no police. I'm all in favor of getting rid of police, but you better figure out something else. If you got a better system out there than having police departments, I'd love to hear it. And I'd love to know what it is. But just to get rid of them, that is the ultimate insanity. And they're going to do it in Minneapolis, John.
Well, see, the crazy ideas that you're referencing there are what happens when you let inequality and excessive debt reach a certain point where, we borrowed so much money, we can't make the system work anymore. We've allowed, a concentration of wealth that's just epic, just historically unprecedented in the 1% at the expense of the 99%. And so now the peasants have their pitchforks and their torches and they're storming the castle. And, it shouldn't be a surprise that a lot of the ideas that are being proposed out here now are crazy. they're never going to work. They're more destructive. They will make the problems worse, of course. But see, that's what you get when you don't fix things early. You get the most extreme voices being the loudest and having an impact when in a rationally run world, they would be marginalized because stuff would basically be taken care of. Things would work reasonably well, so the vast majority of people wouldn't be listening to the most extreme voices. But we've screwed up the system so badly that extreme ideas are now being, being put mainstream. Forth in the mainstream, and they're being tried. A lot of stuff is going to happen that in retrospect won't make any sense at all, right? That we'll look back on and go, oh my God, that was not the solution.
Abolishing the police department. It's going to lead to chaos and gangs. And you're going to have to affiliate with gangs in Minneapolis. You're going to have to create your own gang and your own people looking out, patrols. And how are you going to how are you ever going to solve a murder? I mean, do you think they're going to be able to actually abolish, defund the police department? Is that ever going to happen?
No, well, it might be tried in some places, but it's a stupid idea, obviously. But it's the kind of thing that you get when people are really, really riled up because they've been abused for a long time. You know how it works just personally, right? When things are going badly and you feel like they're going to continue to go badly and your frustration just builds up, you do irrational stuff, right? That's when you blow up at whoever's around you, even though they didn't necessarily do anything. You're blowing up because of all the stuff that happened to you before you ran into the person that you're blowing up at. Yes. Well, we're having that happen on a national scale now. And there really is no fix at this point. That's the scary thing, because we've already spent all the money that we would have spent taking care of this stuff. And now we're just into pyramid borrowing. We're into the Ponzi stage of the process where, we got to run deficits of 5 or 10% of GDP just to keep the system from imploding. And then we have to cover all the interest on that debt or otherwise manage that debt with more debt, So we're at that point where, the Austrian School of Economics says is the end of a cycle. When you enter Ponzi finance, that's when it blows up on you. And that's where we are now. So we've got all this crazy stuff happening. Oh, and we're not done necessarily with the crises, by the way. No. We've got two or three that we're juggling right now. But, we've got China and India possibly in a shooting war on one of their disputed borders. It's hurricane season, and we've got the first tropical storm of the season heading for the U.S. Gulf Coast.
Yes.
So we've got lots of stuff that could still go wrong. And we're trying to run a presidential election in the midst of all this. So the one good thing, the good thing about ending the lockdown is that the economy goes partially back to normal and politics can be done in a less contentious way. You know, if we had to have just mail-in ballots or something like that, and there could never be political rallies or anything, the election would have been seen as illegitimate by whoever lost, for sure. So at least we have a chance at a legitimate election, because, you know, an illegitimate election in the middle of all this stuff, let's say Trump won and the left decided he was cheating, that would make the current riots look like peaceful demonstrations, you know? So we don't want that. We definitely want at least the mechanisms of politics to work. But I tell you what, the financial side of this is toast now. You know, if you're not loading up on gold and silver in the face of, you know, deficits of 10% of GDP and corporations, are you seeing what they're doing now? they're borrowing record amounts of money.
Yes, I did see that.
And maxing out their credit lines because they're terrified. So corporate debt is soaring. At the same time, government debt is soaring, and they were already soaring before. But now the inflection of the curve is like parabolic; it's straight up. So we really are heading into the blow off phase of it.
Here's a question, John: should you be maxing out your credit line and using it to buy gold and silver?
Well, see, you know, that is a question that comes up a lot whenever you talk about. Currency crisis and precious metals going up versus the dollar. Why not mortgage your house, borrow every penny you can and buy gold and silver with it, because you're going to pay back that debt in depreciated currency, right? So you win both ways.
Yes.
So you make a leveraged bet on currency crisis by borrowing to buy gold, basically. And as with any leveraged bet, if you win, you win epically. But if you lose, you lose totally. Everything disappears on you.
Well, but here we've got another big short here. Effectively, everyone will be shorting the dollar again because we printed so much currency, because we've done all these stupid things and debased the currency. And therefore, do we wind up like what's happened in the past 5 years with a dollar bull market that's totally confounds the experts? Is that where we're going to head again? Because effectively, anytime you max out, borrow, you're shorting the dollar, right?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Trilogy Metals is a world-class developer in Alaska's Ambler Mining District. The company already possesses 8 billion pounds of copper, 3 billion pounds of zinc, over 1 million gold equivalent ounces, and now over 77 million pounds of cobalt. Trilogy's Arctic project boasts an after-tax net present value of $1.4 billion with a 33% IRR. Trilogy is led by an experienced management team with proven success in discovering and developing projects in Alaska. The company is well capitalized, has no debt, and possesses strong institutional support. Trilogy trades on the New York and Toronto exchanges under the ticker symbol TMQ. To learn more, go to trilogymetals.com. That's trilogymetals.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yeah, basically borrowing money is kind of shorting the dollar.
Yeah, in this case,
which means you have to get dollars. See, all the debt that we've taken on previously contributes to the dollar strength because people out there have to acquire dollars somehow in order to pay off their debts, right? And that has contributed to the dollar strength. And see, that's one of the reasons why you don't want to make a bet that has a time component on something like precious metals. You know, if you short the dollar by buying precious metals with borrowed money, you got to be right within a certain time frame because you have to pay that money back that you borrowed. And if you can't pay it back, they come and take away everything.
Or you go bankrupt. And since everyone's bankrupt anyway, what difference does it make?
Well, they'll take your gold too.
If so they can find it,
you have nothing.
They're not that smart. It doesn't really work that way. Very few states allow them to actually raid your house to recover property. It's just not done.
Be careful with what you seem to be advising people.
I'm not advising anyone. I'm saying it's probably a bad idea and you'll probably get burned because everybody is going to be doing it, right?
Well, again, making a bet like that has a time component where you can lose if it doesn't work out for you in a certain time is really dangerous.
Yes.
So that's why you don't want to do it. And a better strategy.
I'm not encouraging you to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not.
I mean, I kind of do it in effect, but you don't want to trade like I trade, because I'm operating more from the point of view of a compulsion than from any kind of rational stuff. But
you're a professional too, John.
Yeah. you still don't want to do it the way I do it. But what a normal person ought to do to approach something like this is, first of all, get debt free. I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive, right? But it protects you from the crazy stuff that can happen in your life, like losing your job or being locked down because there's a pandemic or something like that. If you have no debt and a bunch of cash on hand, then a lockdown is not a financially catastrophic event, right? You can get through 2 months of this.
Yeah, no problem. But
if you have maxed out credit cards and a car loan and student loans that all have to be paid off while you're locked down, your life kind of ends financially, right? So you want to go debt free in the face of extreme uncertainty, and then with what you have left over, then you load up on precious metals and things, because you know, it's hard to imagine gold and silver not going up from here. I mean, famous last words, I know, but this just seems like such a done deal in terms of the setup, because we just have no choice but to borrow insane amounts of money basically forever until it ends.
Until the system just crashes and burns, right?
Yeah, which that is out there. There's a brick wall that we're going to hit at some point. And what we're doing now is bringing us closer to that brick wall at an accelerating rate. We don't know where it is exactly, but it's got to be pretty near. And when that happens, we just lose the ability to keep playing these games. And then the turmoil of the last 6 months is going to seem like the good old days. So worse stuff is coming. And this was I think it was a wake-up call for a lot of people. You know how when you have a minor heart attack or something, you get religion and you start finally taking care of yourself. And hopefully the last few months have been that for a lot of people, because, you know, if you couldn't get to the grocery store, or you go to the grocery store and meat is three times as expensive and the produce is kind of old and nasty, you know, you realize you need a garden, you know, you need to be producing some food.
A victory garden.
Yeah, exactly. A pandemic garden, we'll call it now. But you need to be somewhat self-sufficient to the extent that it's possible for you. And hopefully a lot of people have learned that lesson, and that's what they're doing. Cause that's stuff you should have done all along, but it's hard to generate the energy to do it if it doesn't seem like there's a crisis imminent or there's any reason that you have to do it right this minute. You know, it's easy to put off. And a lot of people, I would say, tens of millions of people have spent the last couple of months thinking, wow, I should have really done these things. You know, I should have prepped.
Yeah.
I should have. And so now we're going to see this as people emerge and they get paychecks again and stuff like that. A lot of those paychecks are going to go towards some measure of self-sufficiency. And I think that's a really good thing. So maybe next time around, when the worst thing comes, when the greater depression hits, more people will be prepared and it will be less of a crisis for individuals, at least for the first few months. So that's the good thing that maybe came from this, but that maybe is the only good thing. You know, I don't really see any financial benefits from what we've gone through lately here. I think that just, you know, it brings us closer to the end of the system. So,
no doubt.
So yeah, you definitely want to be buying gold and silver to the extent that you can do it now. But the question is, Carrie, should you be shorting stocks? That's the big
one. I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah.
Big mistake. Only for pros. Not your Joe Sixpack out there doesn't really understand the market well enough to do that, John, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And you know, we've been conditioned to think in terms of things going up. So you buy something you think is going to go up. And the idea of doing something based on a bet of something going down is really hard for people to get their heads around. But there is a time in every credit bubble when you really want to be shorting stuff. And we've kind of with every central bank easing and soon to be buying stocks, we're kind of screwing with the fundamentals of equities. So you don't have any measurement tool that you can use to say, okay, the S&P 500 is 20% overvalued. Therefore, you know, you don't have anything like that now because we have the ultimate dumb money in the equities markets, which is central banks. I mean, they are even dumber than retail investors and dumber than corporate share buybacks. And that's saying something because those two things, you know, those two things I just mentioned are usually extremely dumb money right at the end of cycles. But now you've got big central banks with unlimited printing presses, either buying equities now or getting ready to do it with effectively unlimited funds. So does that mean stocks can go to infinity?
That's why shorting is so dangerous. And if you learned anything over the past couple of years, it's shorting. There's very brief periods where you can clean up, but then you can really get killed. So do use options, use puts. Don't sell the stock short. You know, dangerous. Look at Tesla. Where's Tesla at now, John?
Oh, my God. Tesla is way higher than it was the last time I told you it was a great short candidate. So, yeah. And see, that's another thing where so much money is flowing into the market that it's causing some stocks to be valued irrationally.
Yeah.
Or a lot of them to be valued irrationally, but some more than others. And so you're seeing especially really attractive tech, you know, really exciting new technology.
Yeah.
Always tends to be subject to really extreme volatility because you've got so much emotion at work rather than rationality. And Tesla is a great example of that. You know, they're succeeding operationally, but still a lot of competitors are coming in, and it's not clear how many new cars we're going to buy in general going forward, because normal as in, you know, 2016 or 2017 is not going to come back anytime soon, because really a lot of the small businesses that got wiped out here are gone. You can't close a restaurant and basically fire all your employees and maybe lose your lease on the building and then just turn around and start that restaurant up again in a new building with new employees next month. You know, that would be impossible.
So there's two kinds of businesses that will, ones that will reopen and ones that won't. And I think that the ones that won't reopen were marginal to start with, because if I've got a tenant, any tenant right now, and if they mostly pay the rent on time, I'm going to cut them the biggest break as I can, John, I don't want an empty storefront. And the fact is, I'll even probably forgive it. And I'll go to my bank and say, hey, you want the building? Take it. Because I'm done here. And the bank will say, no, we don't want it. Oh, no, don't give it to us. And as a result, a lot of accommodation is going to be made here. And the government's already said, don't worry about your payroll taxes. You can pay them whenever. And 4 million businesses have gotten the PPP. They'll probably pass another variation of it shortly down the road. Another stimulus coming. I think a lot of businesses got knocked out by the riots and a lot of businesses by the pandemic, but maybe not as many as you might be thinking.
Well, yeah, here's hoping, because small businesses are the last people who deserve to suffer from what's happening, right?
Absolutely.
There are lots of segments of this society that you wouldn't feel bad if something bad happened to them. But God, small businesses, that is a really hard job, first of all, in terms of time. You know, to run a store or a restaurant or something like that is all-consuming.
Yes.
It's got to be a labor of love, right? Because you wouldn't do a 16-hour, 6-day-a-week job if it wasn't something that was really important to you. And to have these guys just be wiped out by this thing.
By the government.
It's terrible, yeah.
By the government on a false plandemic, all right? It wasn't, you know, now the numbers are coming out, John, and it's all about numbers in the final analysis. And we find that the pandemic, once you factor out New York State and you take out all the nursing home deaths, wasn't so bad. And the fact is that so many of the elderly, you know, their days, all of our days are numbered, but the elderly have fewer than the rest of us. And with all the comorbidities, everything else. And then you got the governor of New York just saying, hey, we got all these old people in the nursing homes. Just send the infected COVID patients there. Everything will be fine. And then 10,000 people died. When you actually factor out the Northeast, particularly New York State, New York City, the death numbers aren't really much more than a bad flu season. And the other thing you have to go for is that we know that there is financial incentive to put COVID-19 on the death certificate for the hospitals. They got 13,000 for the COVID-19 death death certificate, and 39,000 if they put the person on a ventilator. So you know how the system works, how corrupt it is. And when you actually look at the number of deaths, factor out New York, and then see the average number of deaths that take place this time of the year, you know, and you actuaries do this stuff. This is why they're so boring and why most people don't really know what an actuary is. But you find that this thing was no worse than a regular flu season, with the exception of New York City. And that should tell you everything you need to know. So to shut down the global economy for that was a collective act of insanity or a deliberate act of economic suicide. Take your pick.
So, we had bad data and made a lot of terrible decisions through this. And we'll be sorting it out for quite a while, I think, when to figure out who did what and everything. But there was a lot of bad data early on that all skewed towards the scary part of the spectrum.
Yes, totally.
And the reason this thing broke politically, because it was interesting for a while, wasn't it? How Republicans tended to not take it too seriously and didn't want the lockdown and everything. And Democrats were all for the lockdown. And a lot of that was because of geography. Rural areas really didn't, you know, there were counties where there were like two cases of coronavirus out there. And they had to suffer through the same lockdown as people in really densely populated areas where there might have been potentially a risk of it spreading. So since Democrats live in cities and Republicans are more rural, just generally speaking, that's why it broke politically that way. And, you know, I think one of the biggest ways that we could have handled it differently is by making different arrangements for different places, right?
Exactly.
If, you know, in farm country in Ohio, like the county where I grew up, Columbiana County in Ohio, where it was mostly small towns and farms, they could have just gone on with life with no problems at all. And, you know, there are probably parts of New York City where maybe you did want to impose some kind of social distancing or something like that for a while, just to be safe, you know, while you were figuring out what the disease was all about. But we didn't do that. We just went lockdown, everybody, you know, stay in your farmhouse and don't come out.
Yes, it was ridiculous.
That didn't work at all. Or it worked very badly.
Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah.
Totally unnecessary. The worst thing we could have done. Anyway, John, we're going to leave it at that. But why don't you tell us what you think, your thoughts about the lockdown, the end of the lockdown solved by the riots? Because if you can go demonstrate against anything, then what difference does it make? What's your thoughts? KL@KerryLutz.com. Don't forget John's site, dollarcollapse.com, Twitter feed @KerryLutz, Facebook page, Financial Survival Network, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. John, we will catch up next week. I'm sure we'll have no shortage of things to discuss.
Yeah. We need like 4 hours for these shows, Kerry.
They're getting longer. Longer and longer. But next week, we will continue onward.
Okay. See ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.